Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Hey, you can listen to KFH Radio for your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen to KFH Radio. Listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. It includes travel and accommodations for four to Las Vegas, plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info with the national contest right at KFHradio.com. You'll stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas's premium sports viewing destination. Visit the biggest March Hoops party at Stadium Swim. Welcome back into Sports Daily right here on KFH. We appreciate you being with us this morning. It's Jacob Albrecht. It's Tommy Caster. And we're coming off a big night of college hoops. A couple wins. Feels good. It's been a while probably since we've had both of Wichita State and K-State win the same game within a week. But they did that last night. Let's talk about K-State first because, Tommy, we got something cooking here. K-State's got a chance. I think now they went 1-0. So of these last games, I said, 8-2, maybe 7-3 in some tournament wins. And I think they'd be in the NCAA tournament. That's how crazy the Big 12 is as far as opportunities to play big time games. K-State forever, they just didn't have any quality wins on their resume. And now they have a bunch. And if we like inverted this and turned it upside down as they now sit, ninth, I think it is in the Big 12, 82 in the net. I think if we turn this upside down and it didn't happen in the order of the way it has, but we looked at them and they got five Big 12 wins, including road wins at Iowa State, at Arizona State, a home win against West Virginia. Like, we'd be talking about them as a bubble team, right? It's just that it all happened in this weird order of everything was bad until the last couple of weeks. I think it's time to refocus that energy a little bit and think of this team as a bubble team, because they probably, if they're playing like this, that's where they'll be. They'll be somewhere in that bubble, and it'll really come down to the nitty gritty of like how many of these games can they take care of. We're going to really, really dissect the Texas Tech and TCU games that they should have won that they didn't. Because those would be real handy right now.
Yeah, I think on top of that too, you go back all the way to the early part of the season in the non-conference, and we didn't really know anything about this team. They didn't really play anybody until they got to that St. John's game. We didn't really know what kind of team we were really talking about. And so by the time we actually figured out a little bit about who this team actually was, they were dropping games to St. John's and to Wichita State. And then they were starting off Big 12 play in a pretty terrible way. So even going all the way back to early in the season, it wasn't that we thought they were pretty good and then they fell off. Nobody had any idea. And so the first indication that you had about this team was that they were not very good, because when they finally started to play, at least some halfway decent or quality opponents, they were stumbling every time. And so they've got to reset that narrative. And they've done that, I think, over the last three or four games, a little bit, at least, to where I think people are looking at them. I don't know if people are looking at them right this second as a bona fide potential tournament team, or if they're looking at them more as they still need to string together a handful, of other big wins to get to that point. But I do think they're at least getting people to take notice of them. And at this point in the season, especially after what you went through early on, I think that's really important.
Well, and we just never really saw them play well at all.
Right.
Until a couple of weeks ago, right? Like, What we're seeing, we thought before the season ever started, on paper, like going into this season, I loved the way this team looked on paper, right? The pieces fit together. Everybody's a nice complement to each other. They've got shooters. They've got some size. They've got a point guard, which we know is important to Jerome Tate. Like, it all looked good on paper. It all would, you know. And it's like, okay, well, you know, it takes a little time to get the pieces to mesh, but it wasn't ever really that. It was more of like a buy-in, it felt like. Well, now they're bought, like you can tell with the energy. And it was very nice last night to see that in a game where it was a little different than it had been since they've been playing really well, right? Like that it was back to like Gasan leading the way. They were still able to utilize that and win a game. They shot a bunch of threes, which they like to do. Brendan Hawson had a good night from there. Max Jones had a good night from there. Everybody else was okay. Coleman Hawkins actually took a couple of big threes, and he continues to be really versatile and good. But Gasan led the way, and based on early in the season, there weren't going to be a lot of games where I'd say, oh, Gasan led the way, and they'll come out on top. But they did. And he made – look, you want to talk about it. That was a really, really smart play to end that game.
It absolutely was. Yeah.
Because they could have easily let him blow by and then tried to, you know, for 3 or 4 seconds, get a shot on the other end. But Gasan made sure he didn't make that shot because that kid is 17 years old and barely. And I think he's about a 50% free throw shooter. Take your chances. You know, does he tie the game? What happens here? He misses them both and you win. So a little good luck there, but a smart play that led to the good luck. And K-State gets a win. That's the kind of stuff where Gasan, like, is he the best player on that team? No, but he's got all this experience. And
he might be the most important player on the team. And there have been multiple times throughout the year that you and I have had conversations about why are they not playing through him more? I mean, he's probably their most consistent offensive player. And he doesn't get the kind of accolades in the conference or nationally that I think he deserves, but he's just kind of a steady force, you know, down low. And he showed off offensively last night at a clip that we haven't seen from him this year, but even in other games, he's been that steady force, you know, down low. Is he going to play bully ball and win against, you know, the top big men in the country? Probably not, you know, but at least last night against Arizona State, I mean, you know what, he put up 22 points or whatever. And what's interesting about that is that, it's not just the offensive output. You mentioned that smart decision. It's basketball IQ. It's that experience. It's knowing in the moment what the right decision is. And I think that, you know, you have to foul in that situation, because otherwise they're going to get a breakaway dunk and Arizona State's going to win the game. And so that was a really heads up, high basketball IQ type play. And he had been doing things like that all night long. You know, he was the main catalyst for the reason that the Wildcats won. But what's crazy about it, Jacob, is that not only was it his point output, but you had a bunch of other players that, like, they stacked the stat sheet. Like, Doug McDaniel almost had a triple-double. And Coleman Hawkins almost had a triple-double. And Brendan Hawson shot the ball really well. Like, when they're rounding into form, man, they've got playmakers that are really good.
They fit together like we thought they would on paper. Yeah. I mean, it's what we thought is finally happening. I got to tell you, with Coleman Hawkins, who's taken a lot of grief and a lot of heat, and I have thought it's been very unnecessary, by the way, and I think I've been pretty front-facing with that. Fans were expecting him to be something he is not, only because he reportedly got a big NIL deal. And it's like, hang on. A, he is an insane passer, has been all year. Like, that dude can pass. He's got great court vision. He doesn't look like the kind of guy who would normally do that, but he does. He's just tall, right? But he's not a 20 point a game score like that. People thought that because he got paid a lot, he was going to come in and all of a sudden do something that he'd never done. That's not what they brought him in from Illinois to do what he does. And that's what he's doing. He's, you know, it's, which is, you mentioned a triple double. That's kind of his threat, right? But it's ton of rebounds, ton of assists, and some points, right? He's not a shooter, although he did take two threes. You know, he hit two threes last night. That's not his game, and it shouldn't be his game. They never needed it to be his game. They brought in other guys to do that. They brought in the Joneses. They brought in Doug McDaniel. They brought in Brendan Hawson. They, on paper, they never needed Coleman Hawkins to be that kind of player. Yet all the attention early when they were struggling was, why isn't Coleman Hawkins playing better? Like, is he really playing that bad? I remember he had one bad game where he missed some free throws or something. But like, they weren't generating any offense, but that was never going to be his role on this team.
You know why that was? It was because those guys that you just listed off, none of them were playing well. Like, Doug McDaniel wasn't asserting himself like we're seeing right now. The Joneses weren't hitting shots. Brendan Hawson has been fairly consistent all year, but even early on when they were struggling, the shots weren't falling at the clip that we're seeing now, and they weren't really feeding David Gasson like they are. And so all of those pieces were not working, and so all the attention is going to your $2 million man. Like, hey, why are you not producing more when nobody is producing at that point? He's going to get the most attention because he's the one that's making the most amount of money.
It's which again is unfair and unhealthy, I think, to a locker room, because that's not what he was ever going to do. So now we look at this thing. The top five teams of the Big 12 right now, as it currently stands, are going to be NCAA tournament teams. No doubt about it. Unquestioned. Houston, Arizona, Texas Tech, Iowa State, Kansas are all going to be in some way, form, or fashion. It's what happens after that gets really interesting, and that's where we'll find K-State, I think, enter the conversation late in the year. And I know it sounds crazy because they have 11 losses right now, but they're right there. They're within a game of BYU, Baylor, and West Virginia, the three teams ahead of them. They'd be in fifth place. So they get some games here. It's a really nice combination, but they've got to be able to handle business. I still contend they have to win at least one of, very likely, Kansas, Arizona, or Iowa State at home. They got to have one of those three, probably, and or win every one of the others, BYU, Utah, Arizona State, UCF, Colorado, Cincinnati, and then get a shot in the tournament. It'll be interesting, though, if they just simply handle their business and end up in a decent standing in the Big 12, their net without some of those other big wins is still not going to be super high. It would probably get up into the 50s, and that's fringy with the net. We know that. So this will be very interesting down the stretch. Now, the good news is, look, at this point, who cares, right? You're on a four-game win streak. You're playing as well as any team in the country. And that's very real. You brought it up yesterday. There are analytics that show they're playing as well as any team in the country over the last three games, and I assume now four
games,
because road win at Arizona State is also very good. And you just sort of take that. Is there anybody in the world doesn't think they can beat Kansas, Arizona, or Iowa State at home?
I think Iowa State
on the road.
They could win all three of them. I mean, all three of those games are winnable games.
Sure they are. Will they? No. But they can win one of them. And I think if they can win the rest of them, which is also a very tall ask in this very good league. But the beautiful, beautiful thing on February 5th is we're having this conversation. They're giving us a resume to pick through. Man, how would this all look if they took care of business, especially in the TCU game, even in the Tech game where they had a really good opportunity? We'd be having a totally different conversation. It's crazy how tight that is, which is what makes me think we're going to have several more of those one way or the other down the stretch here. But I'm so happy that we're putting a product out there with K-State that you get excited about, right? It's not just the Sunflower Showdown. Of course, we're excited about that. Are you going to tell me you're not fired up for K-State hosting Arizona? I am fired up for that game. There wasn't that long ago, Tommy, where it was not fired up for K-State. It was like grit your teeth and be like, oh, good. What's going to happen to them tonight?
Yeah, with the Sunflower Showdown on Saturday, I was looking to see if early lines have been posted, and they haven't yet. But I was trying to like think what's that line going to be? You know, and I'm sure Kansas is going to be favored.
Four or five, maybe.
Four or five. But man, like, let's say it is four or five. I don't think I'm touching that. I don't think I'm touching Kansas minus whatever. Like, I don't know if it's going to be like, I could see, you know, if it's a couple of possessions, Kansas State absolutely getting this game down the stretch. And, you know, they going all the way back to kind of the beginning of this turnaround for them, like you can point at a lot of different things as where it started, a lot of different times as to where this turnaround for Kansas State started. For me, it was the second half of the first edition of the Sunflower Showdown in Lawrence, because I've said it before, like they could have very easily folded up like a cheap lawn chair and went home in that game. Like they were down big early on the road, hostile environment, rivalry game. And man, they took that gut punch and they hung in there. Now, it was a double digit game for the most part, but they never let it get out of control. I think they cut the lead down to 6 at one point. And you know what? In that moment, at that time, in my mind, that was a win. That was a win for Kansas State. Like, it had been so bad for a while, getting humbled by Houston and losing to Wichita State badly. And like, all these different things that had piled up for them. Being able to withstand what Kansas was trying to throw at you on their court and walking away with your head held high by keeping it to within 10, I felt like that was a little bit of a moral win for Kansas State. And then they've been able to make it even better moving forward. You know, I don't know if they're going to win the game on Saturday at home, but I certainly think it's going to come down to the wire.
Yeah, I do. I do too. And I remember coming out of the Kansas game, the first one, thinking, but they actually looked good.
Yeah,
there, right? It was. It
at
was
that point,
more
Coleman
about
Hawkins
like,
had his best game as a Wildcat.
You just like, yeah, all of it was, and I don't even know how to describe it. Honestly, I don't even know how to describe the difference between that vibe, even in a loss, and what we had seen, because they still lost the game.
Right.
But it was tangible, because we both know, like, it was very clear coming into the show the next day, like, well,
they
that's
needed,
pretty impressive
they
second
needed,
half.
Yeah, they needed building blocks. They needed indications to show that, you know, they weren't dead on arrival. You know, that they weren't at a point to where you could just ignore them for the rest of the season. And I think that's a credit to Jerome Tang, because it very easily could have completely fallen off a cliff. And, you know, we could be talking about them right now, 5 or 6 games under 500, completely irrelevant this season. Your $2 million man in Coleman Hawkins, feeling like they threw that money away, all the newcomers not contributing, and they've completely done a 180 and they've gone the different direction.
Yeah, I mentioned how much I thought Coleman Hawkins deserved credit and got undue criticism. Jerome Tang didn't get undue criticism, but he got a lot of it. And so he deserves a lot of praise for the way
Absolutely.
They're playing now. And absolutely has this team in a position now where I mean, outside of catastrophe and this being a mirage, which I absolutely don't think it is, all of those really uncomfortable things with Jerome Tang early, to me, are in the rearview mirror and not even in the equation now, because we've seen a team buy in under him and him work his magic in that way. That thing that we all really enjoy about him, you know, the way he coaches up and talks about people and talks about behaviors and, you know, like, those kinds of things that we all like, now we can refocus on that. And now it really does just become this conversation, I think, like, is this team good enough to go on the kind of run it's going to need to go on? X's and O's on the court, we can just sort of dissect it that way, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully, all the other stuff can go to the side now.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I agree with you. I don't think that it's a mirage, what they've been doing lately. I don't think anybody is at the point, you know, ready to crown them yet. Like, they've got a long way to go, and they're going to need to go on. I mean, they're already on a 4-game winning streak. They're going to need to go on a pretty epic, you know, streak here, or at least, you know, show a lot more wins than losses in the final stretch of the conference season and then in the conference tournament before we can legitimately have them in the mix for a bubble team. Like, there's a long way to go. So I don't want us to get ahead of ourselves.
No.
But it does deserve a hat tip to Jerome Tang for what he's been able to do.
Just to put into perspective how difficult the kind of run they're going to need to go on, they only 3 teams right now in the Big 12 have started conference play that way. Right? So, like, what we're asking them to do is like what Tech has done through the first half of the year. It's going to be very, 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 very difficult. But we're excited about K-State basketball again, and that's all we can ask. When we come back, we'll have more Sports Daily on the other side.